In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman.
And I'm Josh Knapp.
And Josh, today we're gonna we don't have a laser topic that we're focusing on, but I know you had thought about something that you wanted to kind of bring up, which I think is important to sort of remind people of, and something that I think can be a bone in people's throat at times. But before I do, I just want to remind people to go check out the podcast on iTunes. It's emsseo.com/iTunes. And do me a favor, leave us a review or a rating there. So it really does help us in the iTunes stats and how we come up when you check for EMS podcasts there. And, of course, go to emsofficehours.com for the podcasts that are coming out and other content as well. So.
It sounds like a plan.
Yeah. I always try to encourage people, man, because, you know, listen, people are busy, and taking that 3 minutes to go to iTunes, and which I haven't only taken that, I timed it when I've commented on other people's podcasts. Takes about 3 minutes for people to go and leave a quick review and rating, you know, but people are busy. So sometimes it's difficult.
But it's an app on the phone. Come on. You know,
it's easier if you're listening to the podcast from iTunes. If you have to go to iTunes, if you listen to the podcast, let's say on from the blog itself or on Facebook or something like that, it's harder to go and, you know, type in the link to go to iTunes and stuff like that. It's much more difficult.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to cut anybody any slack. You can be the nice guy, you know, good cop, bad cop.
I try to be the nice, you know.
Yeah, you don't do very well at it, though. We don't know you.
Depends. But,
I don't have an iPhone. I have an Android, and the Android comes with an app for podcast listening. You just type in the search engine, EMS Office Hours, and, you know, poof, you have EMS Office Hours.
And we're on Stitcher, which is through Android as well. So They can look at Stitcher and find us there if they're on Stitcher. So,
go ahead. What were you going to say?
Talked about, you want to talk a little bit about, partners in general and some skills that are, one skill in particular that's kind of different than your usual IV sticks and stuff, but another skill that kind of is directly affects us as their partner and coworker.
You mean like when they're driving and you're in the back and they're playing a song on the brakes? And tapping, or alternating between the gas and the brakes, and your patient is getting nauseous, and you've run out of Zofran, and you're now need the Zofran, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, right? For me, I feel as if that is an issue. And I mean, listen, I've been doing this for a while, and I've had a lot of partners that, you know, very, very big with, you know, slam on the brakes, slam on the gas, you know, regardless of what is going on in the back. Sometimes that happens more if you have a critical patient. They feel like driving faster and more erratic is going to somehow get you to the hospital faster and help you do patient care in the back of the ambulance. Mm-hmm. Now, if we remove some of the safety things that are involved, because, you know, now you're going to get, I'm going to say this because this is the truth and the reality.
And now you're going to get in trouble.
Well, no, the reality of things that, you know, I feel and what I've seen is we don't use seatbelts in the back of the ambulance. You know, we're not belted in, okay, in the back of the ambulance. We're doing patient care. And you're going to get people out there who listen to this and go, oh, I'm always belted. Or if you're not belted, you're just as much at fault for getting injured, you know. But the reality is that, you know, being belted in limits what you can do for the patient. It limits access to equipment. You know, I actually,
No, here's the reality. Let me interrupt you right there. We live in a makeshift environment that has been kludged along for 50 years or 100 years since they started throwing people in the back of a horse-drawn, you know, a hay wagon. Yeah. And brought them in from the hay fields or the battlefields or wherever. Right. And it's never been designed. Even the companies that are out there that have the big names, and we all know them, just if you don't know them, look on the back, lower left-hand corner, you'll see a little name plaque on the on your unit's box, and you'll see who converted it. But it's a conversion, and it's never been designed for a technician to treat somebody while you're moving. How's that for a bitch?
Well, yeah, you're definitely right. And I think part of the thing is that one thing you'll see a lot when you go to like EMS conventions and stuff or companies that are coming out with all these great safety features, right? You can be able to be, have a harness on and walk around the back of the truck and all this stuff, but that shit costs money. You know,
it costs money. It works under dubious conditions.
Yeah.
And basically, you're in a fiberglass box. You know, I mean, a thin fiberglass box with a lot of built-in cabinetry that's laminate wood, that's heavy, lots of plastic, little metal trim. Stuff that, you know, in a distorted box will just break off and add to a nightmarish environment to be then, you know, tossed around in like a rag doll, not even considering your patient. And, you know, and even if I want to stay on this bitch a little longer, you know, if you've ever done some critical care jobs or you know, semi-critical jobs where you have a vented patient, you have multiple drips running, you may have one or two other things going on, an A-line, let's say, and, you know, you're trying to monitor that. Your monitor's hung on the back of the stretcher with its convenient little hanging spot, but it's not locked down. Your vent is probably not locked down. I mean, it's, yeah. You know, you have, then you have these, you know, 20, 30, 40 pound pieces of equipment that are ready to fly in the event of, you know, a negative gravity situation is what you have when you get into an accident.
I remember when I was doing critical care transports and we had a tray for the vent that would go, it would attach to each side of the stretcher and kind of be like a tray that would go over the patient's legs.
Right. Yes.
You know? And you put the vent on top of that and strap it in. And not every ambulance had it. So you almost kind of coveted those things and had to hide them at the end of your shift. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They wouldn't disappear overnight and you come back a day or 2 days later and it's gone because they changed out ambulances. They didn't take that with them. And the ambulance that they changed out is now in the shop and that's where your tray is. And now you get a vent job and you're trying to do a vent job. You know,
and forget about it. And, you know, quite honestly, you have the vent and nobody gets on a vent without a monitor. So you have the vent. As soon as you have a vent, you have a vent and a monitor and you probably have a couple of drips. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I was never factory authorized or factory in service on how to tie that table by a different manufacturer to my stretcher, which has now changed three times, but the table has never changed.
When you think about the table, right? Even though, listen, this is the thing with this podcast, Josh, right? Is that you start talking about this stuff and you start realizing the nuances of EMS that get overlooked, that are frustrating, but that if they are addressed properly by, you know, the powers that be, right? Would make people's jobs much easier, you know, like take this vent tray for instance, right? You go from where it would, those were designed to fit on back when I was doing it on the old, you know, Furno stretchers where the
right.
railings were round.
Right. That Remember was that?
Shape,
yep.
And that was the shape of the foot of the tray so that it would sit snugly on that. Now most ambulances are usually the yellow sort of Stryker or Furno models that are square.
Right, the power stretchers.
Or the triangular type, you know, they have the more sharp, the sharp edges rather than the rounded edges. And that
you have a round hook to fit right. over that.
Exactly, and those vents aren't really, you know, for that. But this is just part of the overall thing. You know, you talk about, like talk about the thing with driving and the safety element of it is, you know, you've got manufacturers who come out with these great ideas for safety in the back of the ambulance, but nobody is looking to upgrade to do that because, you know, again, it costs money, it costs training, all that type of stuff. And then you have the other end of it too, which on management side, I have to say, is when they get equipment like that and they want to buy equipment like that, you have employees that resist using it, right? They'll get in-serviced on it, and they'll be like, "I'm not putting that shit on. I'm still going to be in the back of the truck. I'm not putting this harness on and walking around the back of the truck, you know." And they'll resist wearing it. Now, management, of course, you know, point of view as well. You know, it's mandated to use it. If you get into an accident, you get injured, and you're found not to be wearing that harness, then we are not going to be liable for your injuries and you're out of
work. Or they're certainly tried. It's another thing in the way that could screw you royally, especially right. if you can't go back to work.
Right, exactly. And everybody and anyone who's been out of work in EMS knows this is not the job to get hurt in and try to go out of work. You know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. You know, and you know, Josh, getting back to partners and stuff like that, I mean, you know, I remember years ago, what was the saying that if you could drive the ambulance with like a cup of water on the dashboard without spilling the water, you were driving fine. But if you spilled water, it means you were hitting the brake or you're hitting the gas too hard.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, I forgot. That's like old school, you know, guys who would say how to drive an ambulance. And right. and nowadays, you know, it's we've automated that process, haven't we? We you know, you got your SIVO or EVOC certification. Hopefully it's EVOC because SIVO is kind of nonsensical when it comes to an emergency vehicle. I mean, there's good stuff in the course, but they right. don't actually put you on a track and, yeah. you know, say, okay, drive this fast, now brake as you cut through cones and back up and all that stuff.
I went through two different versions of EVOC type courses, where you do a course and stuff, and part of it is going in reverse around the cones, and part of it is parallel parking the ambulance and you know, all different types of things, you know, to maneuver the ambulances and stuff. And I felt it was beneficial, and I felt that it gave me a clearer picture when you do that, you know, that the ambulance is not, it's not a pickup truck. It's not a big car, you know. There's ways, you know, to maneuver and to operate the ambulance in a safe manner that you don't hit cones or other cars or people. And there's ways to do it as well so that you remain safe and not get into, you know, into an accident. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in a few accidents, you know, during in my career. Luckily, they've all been minor, you know, fender benders. No one's been really injured from it. But, you know, that's me and my luck. But if you look, you can do a search online. You can, you know, go to the Google and, you know, have look it up there, and, you know, you'll see many, many fatal ambulance accidents.
Well, look at my, not even fatal. I mean, it, or could have been potentially fatal. Right. There was this, I mean, you probably saw it on YouTube or in your feed. FDNY, two FDNY yes. buses,
yes.
one T-bones the other. Two yeah. ambulances, one T-bones the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I heard from, so, you know, I work in an environment, we have a lot of guys who work multiple jobs. A lot of guys are full-time FDNY and yeah. and work at my place for a little extra.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? Right. Right.
Several jobs.
So this guy came in, he happened to know the, he happened to know some of the people involved. He also knew some of the leadership involved. And those guys were, all of them were written up with CDs.
Really?
A CD is a command disciplinary charge or command discipline. It's basically, you know, being written up and, you know, it can affect, it affects your work. It affects everything.
Yeah.
And they were written up for not operating in due regard. And the story came out that, you know, the driver of the car, the driver of the ambulance that T-boned the other was supposedly running to a 1013. Again, for the people outside of the area, 1013 is life and death, usually involving MOS. And so they're going balls to the walls. And guess what? There was not a 1013.
Yeah.
So now these guys are literally looking at their jobs, you know, and for what?
Yeah, listen, that is, you know, and the 1013 issue, I mean, you know, that's something is a whole nother, you know, podcast we should probably do about respond to that type of stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one. It's a hard decision because when you're hearing stuff go down and you're hearing people call out and they're in trouble, you want to be there.
Yeah, there's been times I've been on an assignment and I've heard stuff going down and you can't leave.
Right.
You know, you're stuck. I mean, I remember being on calls back, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And I've been on a call with, you know, a couple of police officers and you hear shit going down and they're looking at you like, what do? We don't want to leave yet. And I would be like, all right, I can't go, but you can go, you know, and I let the cops leave and go respond. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or another EMT unit that might be with me or another medic unit that was with me. I would be like, all right, listen, we got it from here. Go respond to that.
You know, I mean, I don't know how well you get along with the constabulary in, that's a bad pronunciation, the cops in your grounds, in, you know, stomping grounds, but you know, I can recall, you know, working the night shift and or, you know, an early, when it got dark early on tour 3, and you know, you'd come by, you'd see the guys, they're doing some sort of street operation, whether it be an arrest or a takedown or something, and you'd come by and just park and put on your side lights to light the area for them.
Well, again, that's a back in the day thing for me, where you know, until they got so crazy with 1089s and stuff like that, where, you know, if you heard something going down, you would just kind of roll by to see if help was needed. Like you said, maybe a light, maybe somebody needed some gloves, you know, shit like that. Maybe there was a something going on where you can give, you know, a cop a couple of bandages and gauze for something that didn't really need an ambulance or a transport, but something that would help them with their job.
How many times during the summer have you thrown cops ice packs and told them to put it under their vests?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. I've been, you know, I've been on, you know, sitting on the corners and sitting on scenes where I've had, you know, cops come over and, especially ones that walk, you know, foot beats and stuff, will walk over and say, hey, man, you got, you know, some water. I just touched this thing and my hands are kind of sticky and you have something you can.
Right.
Yeah, no problem. You know, and the, all the other part, like you said, you kind of roll up on something and maybe giving them, you know, the spotlights help them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, listen, I've always found my relationship with the police and even, you know, other first responders is much more enhanced and much more, you know, it's better when I'm working in the same area all the time.
It's 100%.
And when you get moved around all the time, and when you get bumped from one station to another, one response area to another, is when it, you know, you don't know these other cops, you don't know, and they don't know you, you know, you don't know the other first responders, they don't know you. And just the back and forth on a scene on what everyone is doing or would expect to be doing can be, I don't know, not confusing, you know, because you'll get people, again, you'll get people out there go, oh, you know, if you do your standard care and standard this and standard that, there shouldn't be any confusion. But the reality is that's a bunch of bullshit, because the reality is that when you're on a scene and you're doing patient care, especially when you've got critical patients or multiple patients, violent patients, you know, sometimes just a look to somebody, you know, or certain words to your partner or a first responder or a police officer that knows you will get them to do what you need to have done without sitting there giving a big long explanation about what has to happen and why and all this type of shit. Because you'll have people who will question you on what you're doing, not knowing that you've done it before, not knowing that you've been in a similar situation with that police before, with those first responders before. You know what I'm saying?
How does it make you feel when you come up and you roll up and you have, you know, this old school mentality, and I think it's a good one and I share it. But you get like the new guy, the new Jack who just got out of the academy, and he's like, you know, he has no concept of who you are and what you do and what you provide to him and what you may provide to him when he really needs it and treats you like, you know, just get out of here.
Yeah, they act like, you know, they didn't sign up for it.
You know, right.
Sometimes you get a lot of that end of it where people are like, well, I became a policeman to be a policeman. I became a fireman to be a fireman. I don't want to do the EMS end of it. Not realizing that a big portion of a lot of these jobs is responding to medical calls, even on the police side, if you think about it.
Yep.
Well, so a lot of areas, you know, police respond to critical EMS calls, you know. You know, psychological, you know, psych EMS calls. You know,
or what seemingly is a psych EMS call. I mean, what's the number one thing in EMS that we have to do for any psych emergency? Rule out a medical emergency.
Right. So, you know, you end up, you know, you kind of end up, when you get someone like that who doesn't know any better, you know, sometimes it does take the pull to the side private education. For that person.
Yeah, you believe in that?
Well, you know what? What I've always done, because I'm not that person's boss, I'm not that person's supervisor, something that I've done is I've gotten a hold of the officer or the first responder, whatever, that I do know, and say, hey, man, what's up with this new guy not realizing XYZ? You might want to give them a heads up on it because they seem to be pissing off, you know, other people,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that type of thing. So that, you know, you have somebody else kind of approach that person who's doing the same job, but is their superior or is their more experienced, you know, coworker who can say, hey, you know, we rely on EMS for this. We rely on EMS for that. This is our role with them. You know, if they actually go outside that role, that's one thing. You know, to question, but not to question everything, because you don't want to be that. You think you should be out there catching bad guys, or you think you should be out there, you know, putting out fires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like, I mean, listen, they didn't sign up to do EMS calls. There's like a lot of people in the EMS didn't sign up, you know, to do a lot of bullshit calls that we do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, it's the same type of thing. You know, we didn't sign up to go do a lot of the BS calls that we end up doing. You know, we didn't really anticipate it to be the level that it's at, just like they didn't sign up to be, you know, go be first responders, respond to a lot of medical calls, you know. But that's the fact of life. That's what a lot of the, you know, what a lot of what goes on when people call 911 is a lot of these calls, there's a medical element to it.
Yep.
Know? Well, like you said, with psych patients, where you have to kind of rule out that medical element, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's like EMT 101, right?
Yeah.
You know, rule out an alternate cause for the emotional problem.
Yeah. So listen, Josh, I want to mention one thing. You talk about, like, we started to talk about the driving thing, and
we didn't get to it at all.
Well, no, not really. But one thing that I would suggest, if you have partners that tend to drive like that, is to, you know, let them know that it's happening. you know, that there is a lot of inertia in the back of that ambulance when they're driving like that, you know. And so, you know, a lot of times a calm conversation about what's going on and what they're doing to you and how it's affecting patient care might be all that's needed. I mean, I've had conversations like that, and there's been a few times where that was all that's needed. And there was one time where I had somebody who would not listen, didn't give a shit what I said. And then it came to the point where unless I actually absolutely positively had to do an intervention in the back of the ambulance, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I sat there and stared at the patient and I didn't do it. Now, according to a protocol or according to something else, maybe I should have, let's say, started an IV or maybe done an EKG or something like that. But if, in my opinion, it wasn't a life or death intervention, I was going to make a difference for that patient, I didn't do it. And then when the doctor or nurse said, why didn't I do it? I said, because it was unsafe for me to do it in the back of a moving ambulance. For
and
the patient.
And that's it's a beautiful statement, because if you think about some of the underlying training that we've done, and even as basic as CPR, every class should go through like the five reasons or whatever the reasons are for discontinuing CPR. You know, obvious death, another responder comes and relieves you. The person starts breathing or moving on their own, you know, all those things. But the last one, and the one that's ignored the most often, is when the scene becomes unsafe or unsafe for you to continue.
Right.
You know, so, but the problem with the scenario you're saying is that it's artificially made. Your scene is unsafe because your partner is not following their obligation of protecting you and protecting the environment you're in. And this is, you know, for the guys who are listening to this and have the role, you know, maybe not paramedics, or they're EMTs and they're looking to, you know, refine themselves, or they just want to, you know, listen to what some experience brings down. That is a sacred responsibility.
Yeah.
That is just, you know, when I drive, it's now you have three people that you're looking out for, your partner, yourself, and the patient. And there's no mistake in the order I put that in. But, you know, your partner is number one on your list. I mean,
and you got to think about it this way too, Josh, right? Think about how you drive when just in your car, if you have a baby in the backseat of your car, in a car seat, right? Or a child or something like that, or somebody else in your own personal car who you feel responsible for because they're a relative or a friend of a relative or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You drive a lot more careful and are much more aware of what you do and say in the car versus when you're by yourself and you get a little bit of road rage, or you're a little aggressive at times, or you try to run the yellow light at times, you know, stuff like that. You don't do that when you got somebody else that you're responsible for. And I feel like when it comes to being in the ambulance, a lot of people don't take that mentality. You know, they mm-hmm. still drive, taking risk. And you know, one thing that I try to tell people too, Josh, when I have a one-to-one with people, like especially when you talk about critical calls and stuff like that, I always try to tell them, listen, man, don't worry about me in the back of the truck, okay? I don't need you to get to the ambulance any faster than what driving at a reasonable speed and due regard is going to take us, because I'm okay back there. I'm comfortable with my patient care, my knowledge of protocols, my knowledge of what of clinical presentations, you know, and what I'm going to do or not do for a patient. I'm comfortable with that. I don't need you to drive like a maniac to get me to the hospital faster, because I'm comfortable being in the back of the ambulance and knowing what I'm doing for the patient, you know. So I don't need you driving crazy thinking that somehow getting me to the hospital 45 or 90 seconds faster is going to make a difference, you know, for me or the patient.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because the reality is that I am doing, you know, we're driving, you know, in essence, what, that mobile ER, you know, to the hospital. So mm-hmm. I pretty much have everything I need back there to take care of the patient, you know, and, you know, no amount of driving faster or whatever is going to make a difference in anything, because I'm doing what I can for the patient. Of course, you know, you've got certain things where that doesn't apply, and, you know, you need, you know, trauma doctors and stuff like that.
But, well, that comes down to communication.
Right. But most of the time, you know, that's what it is. And I've told people many, many times when I've had, you know, pediatric arrests and stuff like that, where everyone's ramped up. I'm like, listen, they're like, Jimmy, what do you need? I'm like, I need to start going to the hospital, but I don't need you to drive crazy. I need to, you know, watch what you're doing. Don't kill me back here, and get us to the hospital, you know, in a safe manner, you know. And most of the time, that sort of conversation goes a long way. But I think a lot of people don't want to have that conversation, Josh. And I think a lot of people rather go to the area of, hey, man, stop driving like an asshole. You know, I'm back there. You're throwing me all over the place back there. And it's ridiculous. You don't know how to fucking drive. You know, just think, you tell anybody to know how to drive, they, no matter who it is, you tell your wife she doesn't know how to drive, right? They're going to automatically get defensive and fight with you and feel like, you don't know what you're talking about. I know how to drive. I have the same driver's license that you have, and I know what I'm doing. So don't tell me I don't know how to drive. So then you end up in that sort of mentality going on, rather than just having a conversation, like I mentioned, that might kind of reset that mood and kind of remind people. And it doesn't hurt either when you get a call, even after having that conversation, let's say months beforehand, to just remind them, like, hey, man, let's get to the hospital. We're going, you know, priority to the hospital, but don't forget.
Due regard.
Just keep, remember, I'm back here. I got it. I'm back here, you know, so don't kill us.
Right.
Just by saying that is enough to even to let that person kind of calm down for a second. You know what I mean? Because, you know, and that's the thing. And, you know, it comes down to, I think, you know, with a lot of things, it comes down to that communication.
You know, one of the things that I sometimes say that when I'm meeting a new partner or getting in a driver for, you know, because if we're doing Men's Medic and I have an EMT and I'm ALS transport, I'll turn to this new person and say, listen, the only thing that I really need from you, my sort of sticking point in the world, is I just want a smooth ride.
Right.
And I said, you know, if you think about it, your job behind the wheel here is not only to protect me, but to give me that ride, act like a chauffeur, you know,
right.
Real, you know, avoid the potholes if you can without swerving. A slow start. If the light turns green, you don't have to jam on the gas, and a slow stop, which is equally as important. And so anticipate the light change. And if you see a few blocks up that the lights are starting to change in a pattern and come on down, then anticipate that light's going to change,
right,
and that you're going to want to stop. And instead of jamming on the brakes at the last second, just give it a slow, you know, take your foot off the gas. The bus will decelerate on its own pretty damn well without even hitting the brakes. So, yeah. You know, there are techniques out there. And, you know, I think that they spend all of 22 seconds on it when you're in an EVOC class, but it's the majority of what makes a good ride and what can destroy a good ride. And, you know, we're there for the patient, and most of the time our patients are conscious. They're not feeling well. They're sensitive to motion. And if you can give them that, you can go a long way towards their healing.
Sure. Oh, yeah. All right, Josh, let's round it up there, man. Let's close it out. I think we got a point across today, and I just hope people kind of remember that. And listen, keep in mind that, you know, you might also not be the best driver that you think you are, too. And sometimes it pays to ask your partner when you get to the hospital and say, hey, man, how did I do? How's my driving? You know, before it gets to a level where you, where your partner feels they have to have a confrontation with you or have some sort of issue, you know, when it comes to the driving part of it. You know,
you know, you say,
hey man, how was my driving on that one?
Right, right. No, you're right. And that sort of feedback and that sort of interaction and that sort of questioning can go a long way, especially if you're the one who's really, if you're the, maybe you're doing the right thing, but the other guy isn't. You can show the other guy that it's not a criticism on themselves. You're asking them for a critique of your own driving. Maybe they'll turn around and start critiquing themselves. And the last thing is, well, I actually at one point downloaded one. I had a partner who was so resistant to anything I said that I finally downloaded an app. And there are apps out there that can tell acceleration, deceleration, you know, sort of how smooth you are. And it, you know, became sort of a game to run the app on a transport and say who did better. You know, right. And you get the same thing accomplished, and now it's in sort of a more lighthearted way or whatnot. So if you get somebody to resistance to change, and we've talked about this on a lot of different subjects, sometimes you just have to look at it from a different angle, stop, reassess, and change what you're doing. Absolutely. Because we all know that the thing that really doesn't work is repeating yourself expecting a different outcome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you're absolutely right, man. That's a great way, I think, to end it up, because I think that is super important, you know, that we end up, you know, instead of, like you said, instead of repeating yourself, finding a different way to go about it, a different approach. And that works not just for that, and a lot of things that we do in EMS. So, Josh, let's end it there, man.
Sounds good.
Of course, anyone have any comments or questions on it, give us a post below. Somewhere on this page, I'm sure you will see someplace to leave a comment. Of course, you can send me an email at contact@emsofficehours.com and let us know what you're thinking. And of course, you can get us on any of the social media channels as well. I'm at EMSSafe on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Twitter, so you can get me there. And that is about it.
Sounds good.
I do want to mention everybody that we will be having, I'm going to be having a couple of special guests on the podcast over the next, I guess, month or so. I have a student that I'm going to have on. I think we should be good, and she's going to really give some insight, I think, on how paramedic and EMT students are being trained these days, and I'm hoping to get some of her insight on that. And I am hoping to be on the video podcast, What's Your Emergency, soon as well. So I will, of course, keep everybody updated and let you know if and when that ever happens. All right, Josh, thanks for joining me, man. Late day today. Thanks for taking the time. Again, anyone, questions, comments, let me know. Other than that, as always, I am Jim Hoffman.
And I'm Josh Knapp.
All right, guys, stay safe.